What I want to do for the third year in a row is share some of what I call Seder Sayoverables. Ideas that to say at the Seder. But not just ideas to say at the Seder. Baruch Hashem, there's a lot being said at the Seder. There's even a YouTube video, things people say at the Seder. It's a lot of things being said at the Seder. But I think one of the elements that sometimes gets missed is the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you can believe that. Sometimes we spend so much time talking about the five Zekanim, why were they in Bnei Brak? Those parts of the Haggadah are just to explain who tells the story, how long to tell the story for, when to tell the story. And we get to the actual story and we say, all right, let's just get to the meal. We have an opportunity to actually tell the story. And it takes a certain type of idea that really tells the story more than just gematrias, which are wonderful, and so many vortlach, which are wonderful. But in addition to all that, I would like to share some Seder Sayoverables, ideas that really can make the story come alive, to really make the themes of the Seder something that we can talk about with people of any age, something that makes the actual story become real and something we can live and experience ourselves. I mentioned before, this is my third year sharing Seder Sayoverables. I've worked hard not to have any overlap. You're welcome to look on YU Torah for part one and part two, and hopefully this will be a meaningful third part. And really where it all begins, at the beginning of Maggid, is how to tell the story. And how to tell the story, we say Yachal Rosh Chodesh, and we conclude Yachal Mibod Yom, and we say you only can tell the story when you have matzah and myrrh on the table in front of you. You have to tell the story with props. You have to tell the story in a way that's not just didactic. You have to tell the story in a way that brings it to life. Zalman Saretskin in his Haggadah explains that so much of the year we have our kids go to school, we just expect that they know what to do. They understand these things. They know, we know what we're doing, what we're striving for, what we're all about. But at least once a year, in Chutz Laretz, twice a year, we have to stop and really ask the questions, like Rabbi Glatz just said, to actually ask the questions. And if our kids aren't going to ask it, we have to prompt them to ask it. The purpose of all these props is to get them to ask questions. You know, the joke in my family always was, like, we do weird things, and people ask, like, why are we doing this? And someone says, so the kids will ask. And we say, okay, well, I'm asking. And what's the answer? I just told you, so the kids will ask. At some point, we have to have some sort of answer, right? We have to be doing this for a reason. We have to be eliciting questions for the sake of actually working on our emunah, to really take to heart what is it that we're celebrating? What is it we're trying to understand? The Torah Tamima, both in his commentary on the Haggadah, Baruch Sha'amar, as well as his commentary, Tosefes, Bracha, and Parshas Bo, really delves into this idea. And psychological research on educational tactics really support the best way to teach is to have them come up with the questions themselves. If parents just lecture and talk, and educators just spit back, kibolo kach palto, in one ear, out the other. You make the story come alive, and you make them think of the questions. You make them be the ones to be creative and to be thoughtful. Whole different ballgame. Additionally, by having props, it makes it an experiential setting. Studies have shown that when you have learning that takes place through action, through modeling, and also through action, people acting out science experiments as opposed to just watching the teacher write on the blackboard. The Rambam writes, they're not just to look at these props on the table, to take the matzah, put it on your shoulder, walk around the table. There are so many resources online of games to play, ways to make the Seder interactive, way to make the story come alive, to actually use the props on the table, not just to pick it up and point at it once in a while, but to actually look at everything there, because if, in reality, if we just let the matzah and the maror sit on the table, it's almost like they're not even part of the story. To actually involve them, to act out the story ourselves, to describe the makos in detail, to describe what the tzaros were, to describe what the salvation was, the miracles, to envision it, all the pictures that we can bring into the Seder, the more props that we have, the more it comes to life, the less of a lecture it becomes, and the more of an experience that actually sticks with children, something that every so often, at least once a year, we have to remind ourselves what it is that all this is about. What does the Kaddish Baruch Hu want from us? What is our life all about? What are all these rules and rituals that we do every day without asking? At least once a year, we have to ask the questions or get others to ask the questions. And if they don't know how to, they don't know how to ask the questions, then at Pesach, we have to open up for them. We have to give them a Pesach to actually open it up for them. And in order to tell the story, we have to have both elements. We have to describe the horrors that were and the salvation that Kaddish Baruch Hu was kind enough to bestow upon us. And to start with the bad, one of the psukim, the actual meat of the story itself, Vayareyu osanu hamitzrim vayanunu, Vayareyu, from the root of the word ra. They did bad to us, and they tortured us, vayetnu alein avodah kasha, and they give us difficult work to do. Again, simple understanding of this pasuk is, they did bad things to us, and we know all the bad things they did to us. Vayareyu osanu, they did bad things to us. But there are two more beautiful explanations that take it deeper, the tortures that they really did. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh and the Netziv in Parsha Shmos explain, they made us evil, just like themselves. To have people be slaves, to have people be desperate, to have people eventually treat each other like garbage, because after a long days of work, how can you possibly have patience for your family? To take slaves and to torture people and to break their psyche actually makes them evil. They broke us down, they turned us into evil. But additionally, the Beis HaLevi in Parsha Shmos explains so powerfully, they spoke bad about us, they turned us into demons. The Egyptians had to demonize us before they were able to torture us, to justify their evil plan in their own eyes. This was the world superpower. This was the greatest nation at the time. It would look horrible if they just started picking on the small people and just enslaving them. So what did they do? Jews are dirty. Jews carry diseases. Jews are a threat to us. Jews are ungrateful. And they demonized us. They spoke about us in a way that was a step toward justifying. They're not human. It's okay to subjugate these people. It's okay to torture such people. And as we sit at the Seder and we talk about the horrors of this, not just they did bad things to us, they turned us into evil. And also, they turned us into bad. They made us subhuman. How often do we perpetuate the same problem? Certainly in political discourse, we have this problem. The other side is not just wrong, they are evil. And if they're evil, we can take them down. We don't have to listen to their arguments. We don't have to give any respect to the other side. Because after all, what do they have to offer? They're evil. They're this, they're that. Label, label, label. It's an important lesson for us to think about. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from. Imagine the internalized low self-esteem Bnei Yisrael must have had after being told, you're garbage, you're nothing, you're a nothing. To break the complete self-esteem a human being needs to get up in the morning, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All that was only possible when Hashem intervened and stopped them from demonizing us. Later in the story, we say, "Vanitzak al Hashem Elokei Avoseinu k'mo she'nemar," who cried out to Hashem. But it's so interesting what pasuk we quote. "Vayanchu b'nei Yisrael min avoda v'yizaku." B'nei Yisrael groaned out from the work and they screamed, "Tal shavasam el Elokei min avoda," and the cries went up to Hashem from our work. What a strange way to say they davened to Hashem. Just say they davened to Hashem. They cried out in pain because of the work, and those screams traveled up the ladder to Hashem. There's like a disconnect between B'nai Yisrael and Hashem in that sentence. They weren't crying to Hashem. They cried min ha'avodah. They cried from the work. And the cries, on their own, snuck up the ladder and went to Hashem. The Sforno, the Or HaChaim, and the Netziv, many Mefarshim explained this idea all the same, that B'nai Yisrael were not davening to Hashem. They were krechtzing. This was not a formal act of tefillah. They were suffering. They were struggling, and they just said, ah! It's too much for us. And Hashem took that as a tefillah. What an incredible concept. Kadosh Baruch Hu is there. He's on the side. He's watching. And when he hears B'nai Yisrael cry out in pain, he says, I hear you. I know you weren't really talking to me. You're so busy. You're so burdened. You don't even know how to daven to me. But if you're in pain, I'm listening. Like a parent who's in the next room and hears a child stub their toe. Ah! The child doesn't have to ask, can you come in here? The parent hears that, they view it as a cry for help. It's just a cry. But the parent is there. The parent is present. The parent is listening. The parent is concerned enough to intervene even without being asked. What an important lesson for us to take out of the Seder. Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us. If we're reliving the story right now, then he's present. When we suffer, when we have a bad day, even if we're not in a mindset to actually formalize and put into a tefillah, if we're upset, if we're hurting, if we're bothered, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is listening. And he accepts those tefillos. He accepts our groans. He accepts those krechts. He takes it as if we're talking to him, because he's always listening. And any sound that we make, whether it's in joy or in suffering, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm with you. B'chol dor v'dor. Whatever's happening, I'm listening. I'm treating it as if it's an ongoing conversation. And it's up to us to actually see more and more that Hashem is there. So two little highlights throughout the Seder, throughout Magid. We talk about the Makos. The famous idea of the Abarbanel is that we take out wine from our cup. Mishabura quotes it. We take out wine of our cup with each Makah that we mention, because our cups of celebration of salvation cannot be full when the enemies had to suffer. But you know what? They deserved it. We just talked about how evil they were, how terrible they were. And yet there's a Jewish perspective that's really present throughout all of our Yamim Tovim. We don't celebrate the downfall of our enemies. Because you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's real plan was something else. If the plan was just to get us out of slavery, first plague, darkness, everybody out. Or just to punish the Egyptians, first plague, death, everybody out. The Pasuk, the Sforno points out, actually calls these not makos, but mofsim, signs, wonders, osos and mofsim, demonstrations. Etzba lo kim hi. Etzba is not used for smacking. It's for pointing. Etzba says, look, pay attention. The purpose was, through Mitzrayim, v'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem, to teach the whole world awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to use this opportunity. Hashem has control over the Nile, over the land, over the airspace, over the animals, over the plants. It was a whole lesson in Emunah. And you know what? They didn't get it. They lost their chance. And it hurts us. Things could have been better. Things could have turned out better. What if the Yetzias Mitzrayim experience wouldn't have just been us running away? By Mitzrayim understanding, the world seeing Hashem, it's actually Nebuch. It's actually unfortunate. We take some wine out. The suffering that they experience is not just human beings suffering. It's also a mark of what could have been. The awareness of Hashem that was lost as an opportunity. And you think of Purim, you think of Hanukkah, all of our holidays have the same theme. When Bnei Yisrael fought on the 13th of Adar, they rested on the 14th and celebrated, that's the day. And people in Shushan who fought for 13 and 14, their holidays on the 15th. We don't celebrate the days of war. We don't celebrate the killing and the stabbing. We celebrate the permission, the freedom to serve Hashem, to celebrate afterward. Hanukkah, Chanu B'Chafei, they rested on the 25th day. They rested. The war happened before. But it's the respite. It's the freedom while we're celebrating. We have to look at the Makos, that's the Osos and Mofsim, as a lost opportunity. What could have been if the Mitzrayim had been open enough, willing enough, to actually see Hashem in the world. We have to feel a pang, a twang of sorrow, that it didn't work out that way. I'll just share one idea about one of the Makos that's quite interesting. I saw this in the Sefer Kimotzi Shel Rav on Parshas Bo. A wild idea I've never heard before. Chazal are bothered by when Moshe warns Paro and the Mitzrayim about Makos Bechoros. He says, Kachat Sos HaLaila, at around midnight, give or take, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pass through the land and kill all the firstborns. What does it mean, Kachat Sos HaLaila, at around midnight? So Rashi quotes from the Gemara in the beginning of Brachos that Moshe was afraid that the Egyptians would have their clocks off by a few minutes. Maybe they'd be in daylight savings time, not daylight savings time. Right? They wouldn't have the right time exactly, and maybe they would suspect Hashem of being off by a little bit. But the Sefer quoted a beautiful another, maybe pshat explanation. The pasuk we quote in the Haggadah, "V'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim," Hashem passes through the land of Egypt. He passes through and kills all the firstborns. If you think about it, think about time zones. Midnight is not exactly at the same moment in all places. The further west you go, the earlier it goes. It takes longer in the west to hit midnight. You know, Detroit's in the same time zone as us, but the sun doesn't set at the same time in Detroit because they're further west. Egypt was a country. Midnight is not exactly the same time on this side of the country as on that side of the country. And even from neighborhood to neighborhood, maybe it's a difference of like a couple of milliseconds, but technically, if the earth is spinning, then it gets midnight here, and then here, and then here, and then here, and then here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his precision, carried out Makos Bechoros, V'avarti Be'eretz Mitzrayim. If you look at it like a director of a film, if you want to show what it looks like, you see like a dark cloud, and like as it passes over each house, midnight here, midnight here, midnight here, midnight here, midnight here, midnight here. And as the cloud, as the darkness passes over each neighborhood, each block, you hear screams from the house. Kachatos HaLaila, at around midnight. In other words, there's no one midnight. When is midnight? Depends where you live. Midnight here is not midnight there. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu struck at exactly midnight. Every person died at midnight for exactly the spot where they lived. V'avarti Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Hashem passes through the land. At around midnight, at that time, everyone's experiencing their own personal midnight. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu struck. And I'll conclude with my final idea, really what we're celebrating, what really exactly is the theme, what exactly is the message we're trying to take forward, what exactly are we supposed to be happy about. And this idea is bookended at the very beginning of what we're talking about in Magid, and at the very end. At the very beginning, after asking the Man Hashana, the beginning of the answer is, Avadim Hayinu Lefarah B'Mitzrayim. And we say at the end of that paragraph, V'idu Lo Hotzi, had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not taken us out, Hari Anu V'Aneinu B'nei V'Aneinu, we would all still be Meshu Abadim Harinu Lefarah B'Mitzrayim. We would still be slaves to Paro. And people ask the question, really? We're really supposed to assume, had God not taken us out, we'd still be slaves all these years later? There would have been no social justice movement or awareness over the course of thousands of years. No one else would have stood up and protested the inhumane treatment of the Jews. How can we really assume we would still be slaves to Paro all these years later, if not for Yetzias Mitzrayim? And in the Sefer Ma'isa Hashem, the Haggadah written 500 years ago, classic Haggadah, he explains, maybe at some point, we would have been taken out of Mitzrayim. We would still always be Meshu'abadim, the Paro. If a different Paro rises up and decides, you know what? You people should not be mistreated. You're free to go. We would always be Meshubad to Paro. Wherever we were, we would always feel a sense of indebtedness, a sense of, wow, what a great guy. We should have Paro Luther King Jr. Day to celebrate what a great person who liberated us from all those years of mistreatment. We would always be Meshubad to that Paro. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, enough is enough. I don't want you being slaves to them in their country. I don't want you building their cities. I don't want you even to feel a sense internally that you're Meshubad to what they stood for. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking us out, he made sure we would never be Meshubad to Paro and Mitzrayim. And then actually, if you follow the rest of the Chumash, it took B'nai Yisrael an entire generation to get the Mitzrayim out of them. Whenever anything goes wrong, oh, let's go back to Egypt. Remember the fish we used to have in Egypt? We should go back to Egypt. Hey, whatever happened to Egypt? It takes a whole generation to get the Egypt out of them. It's a difficult process when people are Meshubad to a value. It could be any value. A value of Meshubad to money, Meshubad to our jobs, Meshubad to any type of culture. It's hard to get that out of us. And if Pesach's story represents anything, it's the ability to break free. Not just to break free of one slavery in the physical sense, but to break free of the spiritual shibud, sense of being Meshubad, literally. Being beholden to a certain cultural value, a certain authority over us.
Could you translate Meshubad, please? I don't know what that is.
It's a good question. The root of the word Meshubad is Eved, slavery. So literally it means to be enslaved to Paro. And now we're saying it doesn't just mean enslaved in the physical sense about being in handcuffs and being in the dungeon. It can mean being enslaved. It can mean being beholden. It can mean being enchained to a certain value, to a certain idea, to being locked in to a certain value.
Thank you.
And that really is the idea. What Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about. Not just about the freedom, but about a switch from being reliant on the Egyptians, being reliant on Egyptian culture, but a switch to being reliant on Hashem. As we end off with Maggid, and we end off the Seder essentially with Hallel, at the end of Maggid we say, Haluka Halu Avde Hashem. You know, it turns out being free means being Avde Hashem. So we started out as being slaves, and we end off being slaves. Well, what's the difference? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of freedom is it to be slaves to Hashem? What's the difference? The difference is all the difference in the world. When we worked for Paro, he made us do busy work with no productivity, no sense of accomplishment. We work for Hashem, he doesn't need our work. Everything is for us. All the schar, all the reward, all the satisfaction, the purposefulness that we live our lives with. That's the biggest difference in the world. We're no longer Meshubad. We're no longer entrenched in that mindset and being trapped to Paro, to culture, to society. We're able to break free and instead be Meshubad, instead be indebted, instead feel a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What our freedom really is all about. Chazal say, Ein ben choren ela misha osik b'torah. The real sign of being free is having an opportunity to have a relationship with the divine, to live to something larger, something greater, to live a life of purpose and avdus to Hashem. So hopefully these ideas were the start of an idea of saying over the story, really feeling what it is we're trying to teach our children, teach ourselves through not just words, but experiences, actually going through the story ourselves to realize how bad things were, how demonized we were, and how we cracked out to Hashem, and he's always there, he's always present, he's always listening. And the Makos, a reminder for us, what could have been the mission for us to spread Hashem throughout the world. Important for us to speak about the precision with which Hashem carried out these Makos, which were ultimately for the purpose of not just making us free and hefker, but actually being Meshubad to Hashem instead, to having a wonderful relationship which we remind ourselves every year, and is the whole purpose. Again, wishing everyone a wonderful Chag Kasher V'Sameach and a good Yom Tov.
I did.